aboard, you people. Starship Rocontrol for another day of broadcast insolence. All right, we got a lot to talk about here. And let me tell you, in this hour, stay tuned. Ben Bradley, of course, is going to join us as he does every afternoon from the WGN-TV newsroom. Tell us about what's happening in Chicago. But then we'll be joined by Chicago Police Superintendent after 3:30, Charlie Beck, acting police superintendent, I should say. And he will join us to talk about what's happening on the streets of Chicago and what can be done about it and what his ideas are. So all that coming your way. But first, let's talk about your money. Susan Schmidt from Aviva Investors is joining us right now. And I don't understand this in any way, Susan, what just happened today. The stocks were up 1,300 points yesterday. It seemed like the pressure was off. Today, the Fed lowers interest rates by a half a point. They call it an emergency lowering of the rates. And then the stock market goes down 800 points almost.
Well, it is confusing. And don't forget, we have all the action last week, too. So you shouldn't just be confused by yesterday and today. This is a continuation of a disruption that we saw in the markets last week. Coronavirus has definitely spooked the markets. They're not sure how to handle this. And you're seeing a massive risk-off move. The Fed tried to respond today. We had all the central banks around the world meeting yesterday and talking about taking steps to support their individual economies. The Fed was part of that meeting, and the market rallied yesterday, hearing about this coordination among central banks. That reversed today when the Fed came out and said, we're going to reduce interest rates, as you said, by 50 basis points, half a percent. It was initially comforting to the market, but the market being as nervous as it is right now, it then said, oh my gosh, does this mean we're going into a recession, and backed right off. Remember that we closed down today almost 3% negative, but we were up 5% yesterday. So you got to take a look at these things.
So it's up 2% this week. But wait, but let's go back to that. Was the word emergency? I'm hearing people say on cable news and on the business news, cable business news, that using the word emergency by the Fed and also the Fed chairman's description of this as a long-term problem are spooking the markets. Would you say that's true?
I think that's certainly part of it. And remember that the Fed speak gets analyzed word by word. So the emergency, yes, that spooked the market. Also, that this could be a longer term problem. That is also cautioning investors because we don't know how long this is going to impact the global supply chain, which manufactures the goods that people buy, that drives profits, that drive valuation of stocks. And so that's where the market is really pausing because they can't figure out how to value things right now. I think we're seeing a lot of emotional reaction to that. Longer term, the market will find its way out of this and back into stability, but it's not going to be anytime soon.
So you think it's going to be still a risk off? So descending prices for the next couple of days, weeks, months, what do you think?
Well, risk off doesn't necessarily mean descending prices, but it does mean that people aren't rushing back in to buy shares, that they're taking a more cautious approach. So, for example, the best performing sector today was real estate. That definitely indicates a cautionary approach. I think that people are waiting to see, we're waiting for more data. The problem is that this is a demand shock where we're not sure what the demand is. What if economies are locked down? What if people can't travel? How much are they going to spend? All of those are concerns that the market has right now. And then how long does it last?
Yeah. Okay. So are there certain sectors or stocks that are really overperforming here? I would imagine the people who make Clorox are doing very well.
Well, you'd be surprised. We've seen so much volatility in the market that actually last Friday, the stocks that we thought were, you know, really high risk were doing the best, and things like Clorox were doing the worst because people had been flip-flopping and just now getting out of the last things that they haven't sold. So now we're at a point where I think we are seeing a leveling off, just everything's sinking in tandem as people are trying to get to the sidelines. And what we're seeing is just a general relaxing of values, I guess is a nice way to put it. Remember that we were up 30% last year. So again, look at this in a longer time frame. Being down 7% year to date, while it seems very scary because it has happened so quickly, on a longer term time frame, we're still, you know, appreciating nicely in the stock market.
So what would you tell investors, people who are managing their own money here?
This is chaos. So recognize that there's a lot of volatility and look through it. Hang on. This too shall pass.
All right. Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I don't know if I feel better or worse, quite honestly. I kind of feel, unsettled. Let's check in now with the weather, the sports, and the traffic. Here's Kim Gordon.
Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN TV morning news team weekdays 4 to 10.
Are you saying that they're not real in the afternoon? Is that what you're saying there, Kevin?
No, Ben's real. Ben Bradley's real.
I don't know. Sure. Is Ben Bradley really real?
Thank you. Real lovable.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, that's what you like to tell everybody.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A couple of things here. We've got coming up on the program, Charlie Beck is going to join us in about a little less than 30 minutes.
Love him in Blue Bloods.
Yes. he does look like the Tom Selleck character in Blue Bloods. I will grant you that. He looks like he's at a central casting for a police chief, right?
Though I have to say, every time I see him pop up on TV, in the couple of months since he was named acting chief after, retiring from a nearly 40-year career with the Los Angeles Police Department. We saw him leaving L.A. He was tanned and, he had that full Tom Selleck look, mm-hmm. the hair slicked back, all of it. Every time I've seen him show up at a crime scene where it's 10 degrees out, the wind's blowing sideways off the lake at 50 miles an hour, he just looks progressively more and more like, what did I get myself into?
Well, that's why his wife didn't want to move here. Remember he said that? It's like, and my wife said, no, we're not doing this full time.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because it is new eyes on the problem. So we'll talk to him about that because it is one thing to have somebody who's an outsider. And we've tried that a couple times. We had a former FBI guy,
Jody Weiss,
and then we had a former New York and then New Jersey police guy with Gary McCarthy. And so this is interesting to see a guy come in and no, he's not lobbying to stay.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, a little piece of genius by the mayor's office to do that. Because when you bring somebody in from out of town or somebody that, nobody sent, as we like to say in this town, then, they're here to stay. So mm-hmm. the question is, what are they going to do?
Right.
This guy knows he's just going to come in, shake up some things, rearrange some of the deck chairs, and then leave it to the next guy to go, hey, listen, this is what you got to do. Next guy or woman.
It's interesting, though, because he's been given a lot of power to make some pretty big changes, from reversing Rahm Emanuel's decision to close down several of the big areas where crimes are investigated out of areas, districts, if you will.
Yeah.
Beck
offices,
reversed that.
Essentially.
Yeah. But there was an issue because detectives were no longer in the neighborhoods where the crimes were occurring. There was a response time issue. You moved a lot of the investigative and specialized prowess out of the neighborhoods.
Right.
And Beck has reversed that. He's also done a lot of things that one could argue he was brought in to kind of be the make a couple of the hard decisions to set up the next person for success. Plus, Chicago had been turning to his department out in L.A. for several years for everything from getting a hand on shootings to the clearance rate.
Yeah. Clearance rate meaning that solving the crime,
yes.
Essentially. Right.
Which is always helpful.
Yeah. That theoretically is the idea. Yeah. I will say that I just want to make a point that Julian Bueno, who was in the studio with us last week, he's the young man whose brother was killed outside Richard's Bar in what appeared to be a knifing attack, actually a box cutter attack. And he caught the attacker,
mm-hmm.
and he left his brother's side as his brother was dying, and he ran after the attacker. He got the attacker, tackled him to the ground. The attacker was not charged with the assault, with the attack, and he was let go, and now they can't find him. And now there's stories about now emerging about who this guy really is, mm-hmm. and all other incidents he's had with police and run-ins with his neighbors and other kinds of things. He seems like a very troubled guy, and it seems to me that this is going to become the heater case of the spring here, because first of all, Julian Bueno has hired Mike Monaco as mm-hmm. his attorney. That tells you something right there, just to say, lead through this system. But there's also this idea that what could have possibly happened? Who, especially in an election cycle, as we're deep into it here, who dropped the ball?
Right.
Was it police? Was it state's attorney? Where does this how far did this rise up? So we'll find out more on that. All right.
Look forward to that.
So speaking of all of that, I have in my hand here a report and recommendation of the hearing board of the default proceeding in the case of the matter of Rod R. Blagojevich, attorney respondent attempting to get his law license back.
Yeah, it was kind of a half-hearted attempt to get his law license back. He didn't even show up for the hearing, but his attorney, Sheldon Sirosky, did. Now the decision from the Illinois Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, and they're recommending that Blagojevich be disbarred. Not a huge surprise, but I did like that in their kind of 144-page decision and filing and on this, Exhibit 1... they just basically copied and pasted the superseding indictment against Blagojevich from February a decade ago.
Yeah, 2010.
Yeah. They just said, see, you know, see attachment. But, you know, it's interesting. They, in their recommendation, they do note that, you know, he had positions of public trust and he looked out for his own interests. And they specifically mention all the things that people who are supportive of the president's commutation of Blagojevich have not been mentioning, and that is, this wasn't just about a Senate seat, it was about the shakedown of Children's Hospital, the shakedown of a racetrack owner, all of that stuff. And the ARDC correctly points out that the only thing Blagojevich has ever acknowledged is the fact that he was convicted. He has not acknowledged that his conduct was wrongful or expressed any remorse.
Correct. See, I think that's the problem. I think that's the problem, Ben Bradley, is that had he come back and been contrite, he was still not gotten his law license back.
Right.
That was never going to happen. But if he had come back and been contrite, he has a new trajectory. He's choosing a trajectory he thinks he's going to be able to take advantage of, which is he wants to be a part of the Trump reelection campaign. He wants to be
the next Sheriff Joe Arpaio or the next, you know, I've been victimized by the swampy system.
Right.
And I'm such a fighter and I live to tell about it.
Yeah. I think the people of the state of Illinois, with the exception of some people who weren't paying very much attention, aren't going to buy that.
Yeah,
I don't think that's going to work. Did you hear his apology, though?
Was there an apology? I missed it.
Yeah. Can we play the apology? This is from Cameo, Ben. Let me explain this. This is, you know, we gave him $100 to give us a blind Cameo message. That's that system where you can get a celebrity to make a
alleged celebrity.
A celebrity to make a video, right? Mm-hmm. And send it
and
to you.
Wrote
and you pay
the
them.
Script for Blagojevich.
Yeah, we wrote the script for Blagojevich.
Oh boy,
let's play the original script that we wrote for Blagojevich.
Hi, this is Rod Blagojevich, and this message is for Jeff. Hey, Jeff, I hope things are getting better in Illinois. I'm not sure. I just got back. I know I missed your birthday last month. Happy belated birthday. Brian evidently may have missed your birthday as well, and he is deeply sorry. He wanted me to tell you that he feels awful about it, and he'll make it up to you one day. The last thing I'd like to say to you, Jeff, is good luck to you, and all the best.
Mm-hmm. So,
you wrote that for him?
Actually, Brian and Jeff, the two guys they're mentioned in there, are the ones who wrote it for him. They sent in they sent in the request. Mm-hmm. He came back within 36 hours or whatever. He recorded it for $100, right? Mm-hmm. He's making some bank on this thing. That's good. I mean, you know, listen, I don't begrudge. He's out.
Hey, better him than the children, but, you know, better from you two than for you three than the children's hospital.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So what we decided to do, we felt so badly about not getting an apology. We sent him a script that we knew we could turn into an apology.
Oh, I can't wait.
And now this special Cameo message from former Governor Rod Blagojevich.
Hi, this is Rod Blagojevich, and this message is for Illinois. I just got back, and I know that I'm deeply sorry. I feel awful about it, and I hope to make it up to you one day. Good luck to you, and all the best.
I don't know. I feel better somehow.
All right.
Like, I've actually heard him apologize now.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we're doing everybody a service here. We're doing the people of Illinois, and I think we're doing him a little service, too.
You know, as a taxpayer, I feel better. I have received the closest that I'll ever get to an apology.
That's really true.
You know?
Well done, Ro. Listen, we were able to elicit... The Ro Khan Show gets results. That's what we like to say around here. And he has... now apologize to the people of Illinois, even if he didn't intend to.
Yeah.
But maybe he did. Ben, you and I should look at it this way, that maybe he knew exactly what was going on, and he knew that he couldn't really officially apologize because then he might get in trouble with, the president or Mrs. Blagojevich or somebody along the way, a lawyer. So he decides, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make this happen.
There's a Machiavellian genius there.
There is.
I just can't wait for Jeff Carlin to submit that to our new corporate parent company for the expense reimbursement of $100.
No, it's coming off my line. It's coming off my line right here. All right. Thank you, Ben Bradley. We'll see you on the WGN TV News starting at 4 o'clock. Thank you, sir.
We got
the WGN Radio News coming away in 2 minutes. There's a reason I'm playing this song. This was voted by Twitter users one of the top songs to wash your hands to during the coronavirus outbreak.
Man, all things medical, Bee Gees win.
Yeah. How about this? How about that? Now, they say that you got to do it for 20 seconds. Or two times happy birthday to you. Is happy birthday to you only 10 seconds? Because, my God, if it's only 10 seconds, it seems like it goes on forever. Right? They said you have to sing that twice, and then while you're washing your hands, they say 20 seconds of listening to the Bee Gees will actually get you into a spot where you got all the stuff off that you need to get off.
Well, it's one of those songs you can kind of just have fun standing at the sink and kind of moving a little bit, listen to it. It's a great little jam. So it might encourage you to be like, okay, I can hang here for a minute.
Here's another one. I don't know. I don't think I really want to wash my hands to Africa.
Oh, heck yeah.
Nah.
Yeah, just belting that out, I'd love it.
Mm-mm. No.
Do you prefer the Weezer version, the Toto?
I'm sure you do.
No, I'm asking if you do. Maybe you'll like it better if you
no,
listen to the Weezer version.
I never liked any version of that song.
What?
I'll be honest with you. Yeah. And washing your hands, I'm just telling you that I think that when I think of Africa, I don't think of washing my hands. Here's another one.
Jolene.
Voted by Twitter users to be the best songs to wash your hands to.
I listen to Stairway to Heaven, start to finish. That way I know I got a good cleaning.
There's no skin left on your hands, right?
No, but I know at least I don't have the coronavirus
and
after
doing it.
And
they got it at Vita. Yeah, let's do that one.
Hold on.
The full 16 minutes.
Hold on.
A little bit of Monica in my life. A little bit of Erica.
Number five on the list.
A little bit of Rita's all I need.
There you go. Oh, man. I might have gone a little crazy. There's been more emergency supplies purchased for my household.
What'd you get?
So my son-in-law and I are, and this is the problem. I've conscripted him into the craziness of this. So he's out today trying to buy foodstuffs. You know, we're trying to put together at least 2 weeks worth of food for everybody. So that in case anything happens, we got the water. We're good on water, by the way, in case anybody's asking, you're wondering, it's going to be okay. We're okay on the water. The other thing, though, is what do you do if, like, the power goes out? So now we're thinking about getting a
generator.
Like a generator. Or we can't decide if we want it just a battery backup or we want the actual generator that's got the gas. I'm kind of thinking between the two of us, we might blow something up with that. So I'm just hoping.
Well, you'd have to get gas.
That's true. So just saying, and I'm not trying to induce any kind of panic here. I'm just having my own personal thing. This is going to make me feel a little bit better. I got more rubber gloves than you could possibly imagine. I don't know what I'm going to do with the rubber gloves.
I feel like you enjoy the crisis of it all. Like you get really into it. Like, it's almost kind of fun to you.
No, it's worrisome to me, but maybe worrying is that's my joy.
Yeah.
That's sort of, that runs in the family.
Enter a certain part of your brain.
Yeah. It sort of tickles that thing.
Adrenaline is your drug, yes.
Yes, that's how it works. All right. Thank you. Thank you both for your diagnosis. How about, let's do the weather, sports, and traffic. Kim Gordon. Okay. So, Charlie Beck, we are told, we were awaiting him, and we are told that he has been called into a separate situation at the police department, and he will reschedule for tomorrow.
Crime never stops, Ro.
I think that's probably correct. And he is a crime fighter. I'm not going to... I, I, I can't get mad and I can't judge when the police superintendent says, I can't do the interview right now. We got something going on. Because I figure they always got something going on. I'm watching every morning now. I don't even know what to be more nuts about. Every morning now, I look at my news feed that comes in. And I look at my emails that came in overnight. And in a lot of those emails and the local news feed that I get, it's all crime, 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 crime. You know, this happened here. I get, even from my own community, little, you know, like a little community association, we're getting emails. Well, this happened overnight, you know, a block from us and this and that. And it's just, it's insane. It is absolutely insane. And you cannot blame solely the Chicago Police Department for this. I mean, the problem is that, and this is it. This is the beginning, middle, and end of the problem. And I'm not trying to be in any way unfair here. I'm just telling you like it is, as I see it in this city, as a lifelong resident and somebody who follows this for more than half of my life. The problem is that we are letting dirtbags out of jail when we should be holding them. And cops know, and even prosecutors should know. There are certain, you look at somebody's body of work. There are people who get caught up in the wrong thing all the time. That's true. You pick up a guy for the first time, he's got no arrest record. He's 19 years old or whatever, and he gets picked up for, you know, standing on a street corner and maybe he had some weed on him or maybe he had some cocaine on him or whatever it happens to be. As long as he didn't have a gun on him, and you're going to go hold that guy. As a matter of fact, he's more likely to get put in the pokey than the guy with a gun on him. But if you got felons, like convicted felons who have guns on them, you can't let them back out on the street. You got to hold them. You got to make that difficult. Gary McCarthy, the first guy who looked a little like Tom Selleck, who was the police superintendent, he said in New York what they did. You know, New York has one third the amount of murders a year Chicago does and three times as many people. So that's a factor of 9 times differential. Think about that. You have so few murders because gun violence in New York City is relatively low compared to Chicago, because if a felon gets caught with a gun, it's an automatic 2-year bid in state prison. No questions asked. Go to trial, you got caught. I mean, that's, the guy's got body cams, they're going to find the guy, they're going to know who he is and all of that, and these guys go away. And that has worked, because you got to be able to do something about that. And what we have now here is this idea, and criminal justice reform. I'm almost kind of tired of saying it like this. I'm almost kind of tired of saying, well, criminal justice reform, we all agree it needs to happen. Yeah, sort of. We don't agree on the umbrella idea of, well, let's just let everybody out. It does need to be modified. It does need to be tweaked. We need to be smarter about what we're doing here. You know, justice is only kind of blind. Every once in a while, she looks out from underneath that thing around her, you know, the blindfold deal around her face. And you have to look and you have to say, well, all right, this guy, let's just look at body of work. If you are a 2-time, 3-time, 4-time, 5-time, 6-time, 8-time loser in the criminal justice system, you know, I'm not calling for 3 strikes, you're out, because that didn't work either. But I think on these case by case basis, you got to look at this stuff. And if somebody's caught with a gun who should not have one, if it's a felon with a gun, if it's somebody firing a gun, if it's somebody menacing somebody else with a gun in Chicago, that's where we start with that right there. And we start to put people in the system and keep them in the system. The sheriff runs the county jail. The county jail has 2/3 of its beds open right now because we are just letting people out. And where does that all stop? So there has to be a systemic look at the way that Cook County handles the criminal justice system. We have to look at the chief judge. We have to look at the Cook County State's Attorney. We have to look at the president of the Cook County Board. We have to look at that entire system, because there's only so many things Chicago police officers can do. They go wrap up a guy who, and it drives me nuts. I can't get over this. They go wrap up a guy who allegedly slashed a young man to death last week, 8 days ago, in a bar, outside a bar in River West. They got the guy. The guy's got plenty of prior stuff. They can't charge him. They choose not to charge him. Now, it's not the police who are charging him. It's the felony review officers from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. And, look, they had eyes on the case. I did not. They may have had a very good reason for it. But you know what we need? We need somebody from that office to come out and explain to us exactly what that was. Why is that? Why, given everything that you know, given the circumstances of the case, and if it's mutual combatants, why is the guy trying to run away from it? You know, I mean, there are a lot of questions. And now the guy's in the wind. They've decided a week later that they are going to charge him with something. There's a warrant for his arrest. And no one can find him. That happens. This is what they call a heater case. This is something that the media has picked up. Everybody's looking at this case. There are hundreds of cases like this right now in Chicago, where some guy who shouldn't have been let go is out. Some guy who shouldn't be on home monitoring is on home monitoring, wearing the little ankle bracelet, which, by the way, if he walks out of his house, he's not going to get caught. And they know that. There's nothing they can do. Now, once he does get caught, they'll put him back in the pokey. But it does not mean that he can't be out there doing a lot of stuff between then and now. It just has to stop. And I don't want to be a desk pounding guy. I fear for the health and welfare of my community, of my city that I love, the city of Chicago. I grew up in it. I adore it. I love all the institutions of it. It's got so many things that are great about it. It's got so much darkness in it, though, whether it's the churches or community groups or even former offenders who try to get together and try to, you know, put some light into those crevices of darkness. And that's part of our reputation. It's just part of the fabric of what we are. But the cruelty and the violence and the death in this city for no good reason has just got to stop. And it does not stop unless we hold people accountable.
You mentioned pointless and senseless violence. I mean, even today, the guy that was killed because of an argument at a basketball game that resulted in one of them pulling out a gun and shooting him in the head. And he died over an argument from a basketball game.
Right. Because everybody's armed. You know, they always talked about concealed carry in this town. Well, we got to have concealed carry. That's going to solve everything. Well, everybody's armed, whether the license to be armed or not licensed to be armed. I mean, I prefer that everybody get licensed, right? But it's only the people who are the least likely to use their guns who are the ones who are licensed. And it's just got to stop. And I'm sorry, man. It's just I look at this, and we met that young man whose brother was murdered at that bar last week here in the studio. And I looked into his eyes, and he was the one who left his dying brother and ran out of the bar and tackled the alleged assailant here. And they recovered the weapon. The police recovered the weapon when the alleged assailant threw it underneath a car. I mean, it's just, I don't know. You know, there's a moment where sometimes logic is just not being respected. And as somebody who wants to respect not just logic, but wants to respect the rule of law, I think that has got to change. News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes.
Super Tuesday results analyzed by CBS Face the Nation moderator Margaret Brennan at 7:18. Wake up with us.
Bob Surratt, Radio Chicago, WGN.
And I'm washing my hands to this song. But we're playing it for a reason, because it's our own Kim Gordon's birthday today.
Oh, you guys, and I got a card and everything. Thank you.
Yes, you got a card. That's all we can afford right now. We got your card. It was on sale. Yeah, apparently fewer March birthdays. So
that's so sweet. Thank you.
We went to the half off sale for birthday cards. We've got that. We haven't got a plan for you next week, unfortunately, because of the way that this week breaks out. We're all
sheltered up from the coronavirus anyway, so we don't want to go out this week.
And we don't have masks right now, so we got to go get some first.
You will be able to come over to my house next week, and this is good news, because I am now fully stocked in case, while you're at my house, if a national state of emergency is declared, I am ready. I got water and toilet paper to last me to 2023.
That's the best birthday present anybody could wish for.
Yes. I also have canned soup. I have a whole list of things that my son-in-law bought. I know.
I'm so happy you watched all those movies. We really have an expert now.
Yeah, I did.
Illinois has now seen 4 confirmed cases of coronavirus, all here in the Chicagoland.
Okay. Pardon us. Oh, wait. Hold on. Is that TV jumping in?
I don't know where that's coming from.
Classic technical difficulty.
Yeah, there we go. TV just trying to take over. So, yeah, what we did was we had a family meeting. I mentioned this yesterday. We had a family meeting. We sat down and we all divvied up who's responsible for what. And it's more fun this way. We're making a project out of it. We're going to make the coronavirus fun. You know, when you got little kids at home, you try to make even the worst things fun. Like there was a fire in the house. Oh, let's make it fun.
Fire drill, kids.
Yeah. You know, it's like that's what you kind of got to do. But they're trying to make it fun for me because they know how crazy I am. Because they're adults now. And I'm the one I'm now the child.
Make a virus great again.
Yep. So that's what we're going to. So that's what we're doing.
I'm picturing a ring toss with Corona bottles.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
See, it's nice.
A themed party.
There you go.
The Corona theme.
We'll make it like a tropical. We'll wear Hawaiian shirts and drink Coronas.
Chinese food. We start with that.
Yeah.
You know, I think they have made a mistake here by all of us thinking, the coronavirus, which doesn't really describe it because that's a whole wide family of viruses. And the COVID-19 is not a fun name. But I think there would be less panic if they called it the Wu Flu.
I like that.
The Wu Flu.
It's all about branding.
Yeah, if they branded it the Wu Flu, people go, it's the Wu Flu. It's kind of cute sounding. Sounds kind of fun. For 80% of the cases, they believe, and this is based on Chinese numbers, so I don't believe anything. But 80% of the cases, they say that they very, very mild, barely notice it. And there may be another number of people who have had it and they had no symptoms, and it just they were able to beat it back. I'd like to meet those people and actually drain them of their blood and insert it into my body, but that's a separate issue and it seems a little dark. But I'm going to tell you, if they had rebranded this thing, there would not be the panic in the park that there is right now, because it is a flu like number here at the moment, a really bad flu, a new emergent strain of a flu, a novel flu virus, as they would call it, which would have potentially a 3% death rate when it first enters into the marketplace. But this is not the environment. This is in literally the marketplace, because that's where people are getting it, because they're going out and touching things. And this, by the way, is a surface-based deal. Very important to note. You're not really getting it from somebody breathing on you as much as you would. I mean, if they're breathing like right next to you, you know, if they're breathing into your mouth for any, and I don't know why anybody would be doing that, but if they were doing that, I mean, if there were kissing going on, that would be understandable. And that's where you get a lot of husband and wife transmission here. But there is the real vector for this is when you touch something, because it's landing on surfaces. They have a term. They have a scientific term for this, which it makes no sense. So I won't even go down that road. But just think of it this way: it's surface boy. So you touch a telephone. And by the way, your cell phone, dirtiest thing. There are holes in your body that are cleaner than your cell phone right now. As a matter of fact, almost all of them. There may be one hole that's equally as dirty as your cell phone. Something to note. Clean your cell phone. And I don't know. Look it up on the internet. Look it up. Go to the manufacturer. I don't want to give you advice and break your cell phone, but figure it out, because that's the way. That's this thing's going to be grabbing the Wu flu faster than you are.
I actually saw today they're advertising chargers that you put your phone in that also cleans them. Like it, these lights.
With a
these
light,
special
yeah.
lights, yeah. yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh.
There you go. All right, let's check in with Kim Gordon. Here's the weather, the sports, and the traffic.
For news at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlan, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
You're selling that, Kev. You're nope. selling that, even though it. Tom's not going to be there for four more weeks, but okay.
They keep giving me the reads with Skilling's
We
name.
Do need to talk to them about that. I mean, this is like one of the bigger stories in Chicago media this year is that Tom's taking a month off to deal with his health issues, and they're still having us promote him.
My next one at 5:15 is, when it comes to the weather, we all want to know what the Skilling
Well, maybe Skilling will call us every day and just call in once a day and goes, I think the weather's good or it's bad. All right, speaking of good or bad, I need some explanation here. We tried this in the 3 o'clock hour. We're going to try it again in the 4 o'clock hour to explain exactly what happened to your money today. Because yesterday, you started to think, oh, man, after the terrible sell-off of 12% on the Dow last week, all based on the fear of the coronavirus, or mostly based on the fear of the coronavirus and slowing of economies and supply chain interruptions and all the other things that are incumbent upon the potential for a pandemic. Today, after the stock market went up 1,300 points yesterday, climbing its way back, it went down very significantly today, almost 900 points. Rana Faruhar. Wait, did I? You know what, Rana? I practiced your name so many times before
no,
you came on.
You did it. You got it.
Faruhar, Financial Times Associate Editor, and you can also see her on CNN Global Economic Analyst. All right. So what's your perspective on what is happening today? Why do you think there was a sell-off again?
So this is fascinating. We had a move by the Federal Reserve, an emergency rate cut, which the last time this happened was in the middle of the Lehman Brothers crisis. Before that, 9/11, back in 1998 when the big hedge fund long-term capital management collapsed. This is something the Fed doesn't do that often. It does it because it thinks the markets need an emergency prop-up. So the fact that they went down on this news is very, very significant. So what does this say? At a very surface level, and I'm going to take you down kind of three layers of the onion here. At a surface level, this says coronavirus is going to be a bigger deal than we thought. The markets are looking around and saying there are all kinds of companies that are going to be hit by this. We already know some of them, the travel and the tourism business, the retail business, airlines, but there are going to be energy stocks. There are going to be ripple effects all throughout the economy, and we can talk more about that. But I want to take you down one more layer, because the sort of secret truth here is that coronavirus was really just the trigger for a sell-off that a lot of us, myself included, have been thinking was going to happen since as early as last summer. And the reason for that is that we are in a nosebleed market. You know, we have been on a tear in the markets for the last 10 years. We've had easy money. We've had record stock buybacks. We have a corporate debt bubble. All that has propped up asset prices and made us all feel kind of rich when we look at our 401ks, if we're lucky. But a lot of it actually doesn't reflect what's going on in the real economy. It reflects what's happening in the financial markets, and sometimes that's just on paper. So I can go deeper on any of that, but that's
okay.
My quick take.
So let's take a look. Let's break that down one thing at a time here. All right. So in terms of the businesses and the kinds of stocks that are going to get hit the hardest here, what do you think?
Yeah.
What sectors are you most worried about?
So two things. There are the obvious sectors that would be hit, you know, with the virus, and we've already seen some of those: travel and tourism, retail, electronics and tech, you know, and that's because of the supply chain issues with China. You know, as I wrote in my Monday column in the FT, one of the major veils that have been lifted here is the fact that we are very vulnerable to a supply chain shock coming out of China. And we've known this for years, and businesses and policymakers always kind of wanted to turn the other way and say, you know, China will change, it'll become more free market. No, it's not going that direction. We are vulnerable. And I think people are realizing that now. The tech sector is trying to outsource to Vietnam, to Mexico. I mean, there's a lot of changes happening, but this is something that's going to play out over months and years to come. I think it's going to speed up the decoupling of the U.S. and China. But I think that there's a second factor to think about.
Wait, I want to stop you, Rana. I want to stop you for a second there, because before we leave China, China has always been concerned, has always been a concern of industry and investors for two reasons. One, whether there would be sort of political pressure placed on Western businesses that go in there, obviously intellectual property theft, those kinds of things, which we've heard about for a generation now, where you have two factories next to each other. One's making a brand name for a Western company, and then the other one is making the exact same product to sell on the gray and the black market. So there are some, that's always been a risk. But the other risk, and I think this needs to be addressed, the other risk is what exactly has happened here. The one problem with China, because you have 2 billion people and you have a very thin veil in terms of their food supply chain between the, especially in the agrarian areas in the southeast and some in the central part of the country, where the farmland and the basically the farm to kitchen to table
the wet
line
markets.
You're is
talking
dangerous,
about these
yeah.
wet markets that where a lot of wild animals are sold as actually as delicacies in China. You know, funny enough, not so funny anymore. I've actually been in a wet market in Wuhan, which is the source of this epidemic years ago, and it's true. I mean, these are places, and these are the hot zones, you know, as we would have called them 20 years ago, where viruses can jump and spread. So that is an issue. But in terms of the hit to corporations, I think what you're seeing is just how vulnerable the U.S. still is on the Chinese supply chain. I mean, 95% of active ingredients and things like Motrin are touching the Chinese supply chain. You know, right. I mean, you're finding, I was actually, amazingly, I was in the green room at CNN the other day, and I ran into a health official that said the masks that health officials need to combat the virus as it spreads are partially made in China. You know, so I think that we're going to have a big national conversation, and I expect this to be part of the election cycle, about, you know, maybe we need some regionalization here. Maybe we need to create some externalities and some redundancies in our supply chain for security, both economic and national.
Well, the whole argument has been, and it, obviously you, Rana Faruhar. I'm
Faruhar,
so sorry.
Faruhar.
I practiced. For the Financial Times, you're the associate editor and CNN global economic analyst. You look at all of these things, and when you stop and you think about the political arguments of 2016 and also in cycles past about bringing all these jobs back to America. But the argument has always been it's too expensive to bring these jobs back to America because the products would be priced out of the Americans' hands that way. It would be inflationary.
You know, it's funny. I spoke to a CEO today who's actually trying to do a made in the USA brand. And he said, you know, I think people are going to start asking, what's the cost not to do some regionalization? And this isn't a black and white. This isn't, you know, you stay with the status quo or you move all your jobs back to the U.S. It doesn't work that way. This is about creating more secure supply chains, making sure that there are redundancies, making sure that you don't have one ingredient that can only be sourced in China. This is sort of basic common sense, but it gets at a bigger issue. And this is the second point I wanted to bring up when you asked what kinds of companies are vulnerable. Companies with a lot of debt are vulnerable, because I think, you know, at some point, the suspended animation, the sense of disbelief that companies can just, you know, throw a lot of debt, that the country can throw a lot of debt at things, and the markets will just keep going up, 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 that, you know, at some point, Wall Street and Main Street reconnect, and we may be close to that point.
Right,
and companies that do have a lot of leverage are going to be among those that will suffer.
We saw that in 2008. Right. We saw the
100%.
Market crash, and then within weeks, you started to see it actually trickle into the economy. All right. Well, just very quickly, the idea that there are very few tools left in the box here, because we've been, as you're pointing out, we've been artificially suppressing interest rates. We've been juicing the economy this entire time to get it up to close to 30,000 for the Dow. But that once it's down, what can we do? I mean, we'd have to go to negative interest rates, and Japan tried that, and it took them a generation to crawl out of it.
I think that's where we're headed. I think that the Fed signaled today, first of all, two things. It signaled that it's behind the markets. It's kind of lost control of the markets, in my opinion. But I think it also signaled that, look, we know we have to keep propping the markets up because otherwise we're going to have a major correction and a serious recession, if not worse. And I think that's what they're going to do. Now, the only question is how long that can last. And that's a tricky question. I have not spoken to a smart investor that wouldn't agree with the paradigm I just sketched out for you, but there's a lot of disagreement as to when there might be a more permanent decline in stocks. I think you could possibly see some relief rallies, some bear market rallies, particularly as we see this summer what the trajectory of the virus is, right, as we see who the Democratic contender will be, you know, right, Tuesday today, as we see in November who our next president is. I think a lot will become more certain. So this is long haul. We're in for weeks and months of a lot of volatility.
Rana Faruhar from Financial Times and CNN. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, let's check in with the WGN Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2 minutes. Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right. This is something we've been waiting for. I'm going to get away from the coronavirus for a moment. Well, sort of. And I'm going to get away from all the other troubles of the world and talk about something that is near and dear to my heart, sports gambling. Now, Rivers Casino here in Des Plaines, Illinois. Just, you could throw a baseball to O'Hare, although if you did, you'd get arrested. It's right there. And it looks like they're about to get, Kevin, listen to this, they're about to get sports gaming there, perhaps in time for March Madness.
I already have friends that are just lurking, just walking around, examining what the sports book's going to look like. They're just hanging out. I'm like, why are you going? You can't place bets. Like, we don't care. We're going to scout things out, figure out what they're doing.
They may be hoping that at some moment the sports book opens,
right,
like in a surprise way. They want to be the first one to actually do that. Well, we got Rivers Ross with us, Ross Sansone, and you're the manager of the Bet Rivers sports book. Again, this is up to the gaming board for the final approval, right? Is that how this goes?
Yeah, so we did put our last submission in for the gaming board. So we are just waiting for approval from them, and then we'll be ready to go.
And we're expecting, I mean, it would be nice, let's put it this way, because we talked a little bit about this prior. It would be nice, super nice, if they could get this done by March Madness, but it's a process, right? Like all of these things are?
Yes, so we are pushing towards March Madness. But like you said, it is a process, and we do have to listen to the IGB, the Illinois Gaming Board.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty much like our rulers. Whatever they say, mm-hmm, we do. So once that final okay goes, we will be ready to go.
Let me get rid of the elephant in the room right here, which is the CDC today and a bunch of other organizations are talking about, because the World Health Organization is warning people not to congregate.
Sure.
Right? They're like, you know, the sporting events in Europe and other places that, whether it's Italy or Iran or whatever it happens to be, where there are a lot of cases of the coronavirus, they're saying, you know, do it without crowds. And the United States hasn't been hit like that yet, but what does Rivers do to make sure that people who are going there are going to be safe?
Yeah, so even in the beginning, since we've opened, we've have a great cleaning method that we do. We've cleaned every night, every hour. Our EVS staff is on top of it. We've even ramped up those games, the cleaning, you know, every half hour now to make sure the machines are wiped down, tables are taken care of,
mm-hmm,
anything like that. So we are aware of the situation. We hope it doesn't get as crazy, right, as it has been overseas.
Right.
But we are aware, and we're going to be doing the best we can.
All right, because March Madness, people are going to be getting together for it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right? I mean, it is the best couple of weeks in sports.
Yeah.
Right? It's just fun to watch. All of a sudden, teams you never heard of, all of a sudden, mm-hmm, you give a hoot about. Mm-hmm. And and these teams, it seems like there is always a team that just plays so above its head. Right, and you see the level of competition is just so great, and it's to me the best basketball in the world.
Yeah.
Right, so you're seeing really, really fun games, and there's always been gambling. I mean, there, you know, office pools and all the rest of that stuff.
Sure.
So what kind of games? What are you guys going to be? What can we expect out of sports books in Illinois here, Ross?
You know, so for us, for Rivers, it's going to be, you know, the whole experience. It's going to be that Vegas experience. We have a great system that we're going to be using that we got our independent line makers for. The kiosk experience are going to be huge because we're going to have 30 kiosks.
Can you go to a window too or no?
Yeah, so we're going to have the windows as well. There'll be 5 windows that you can go to, mm-hmm. and then the kiosk. But, you know, like you said, March Madness is bigger than the Super Bowl.
How many seats? What's the situation look like there?
So we do have like 3 rows of stadium seating, tables in the front, the bar that has seating as well. So it's a good space. It's, like I said, it's not too big, but it's not too small either. So,
how many TVs are we working with?
So we do have the big screen. The big screen does get you, like, it's about a 47-foot wall of the LED screen. You could break it down to, you know, one main game, or you can have 12 different games going at once.
So God, perfect. I started to drool when he said that. I got a little excited. All right, hold, Ross, don't go anywhere. Rivers Ross is with us. I want to ask more questions about this, because I want to think about something else than the coronavirus for just a few minutes. And I want to dream big here. Sure. As Rivers Casino is about to open up their sports book. It's going to be the first sports book in Illinois, right?
Yes.
When it does open. But we'll get right back to that. Rivers Ross, I love that. Love that nickname. Dr. and Mrs. Ross must have really loved it when they named their child Rivers.
Huh.
let's check the sports, the traffic, and the weather. Kim. All right, we're going to get to all of the virus talk and the rest of the stuff and the markets talk, all the things that are going on. But let's talk about another market here for just a moment, because we have got Rivers Ross with us. He's actually Ross Sansone. He's the sportsbook manager at Rivers Casino, and the sportsbook is just about to open. We're this close. We're this close, Ross. Close, Ross.
Almost there.
Almost there.
Almost.
All right. Now, again, for the experience, for the people who are actually going to be having this experience, who are going to be going to this, and maybe they're regular machine players, or they like to play craps or other stuff, but they're not really familiar with sports gambling. Explain how this works.
So to me, there's 4 types of main bets. You can make a wider range of bets, but the 4 key ones that, like, a new sports bettor wants to get a hold of is the 4 I'd like to. The first one is the money line. Mm-hmm. Second one would be your point spread. Third would be your over under, mm-hmm. and then fourth, which is my favorite bet, is the parlay. Each have a different way of going about it.
You're a heartbreaker, Ross. What the hell is that all about? I mean, I love the parlay, too. When you hit it.
Sure.
But when you don't hit it, when you hit half, and explain what the parlay is, you bet on 2 things. They both have to happen.
Yes.
Bet on 2 games.
So 2 or more games linked together will equal your parlay. But let's say if you did a 5-game parlay, only 4 of those hit, you lose the whole ticket, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So it's just more of a, you know, bet less and get more of a bang for your money.
So you can bet on all the American sports, right?
Sure.
And there's also this thing called micro betting,
okay,
that people are talking about. Can you explain that to me?
That one I'm not too sure about, actually.
Okay. Because the micro betting, as I understand it, is that's huge in Europe. The number one most gambled upon sport in Europe is tennis.
Okay.
And what they do is they on their phones, they gamble on serves, mm-hmm. right? Or games or matches. And, you know, so like, Serena Williams could be playing, and then you're betting whether she's going to win or lose the game right there in the middle of it. Right. So it could be 30 seconds before you know the answer.
Yeah,
you know, so stuff like that. And so that kind of action is driving the gambling business all over the world. Obviously, England has had it forever, right?
Right.
You've got, and soccer is gigantic in Europe. What do you think, that football is going to be the hottest?
I do. I think football, of course, you know, for America, everybody loves betting on football. I think that'll be first. Basketball usually comes in a good second.
And basketball used to be considered one of the safest bets, actually.
Yeah, not anymore. They score a lot of points, and those odds makers are getting so close to getting the exact spreads and getting the exact lines. It's hard to.
The favorites had a high percentage of winning,
right?
If you're just going on the money line as
right.
opposed to the spread. Now, well, let's explain that. So you, on the money line, you're just picking the winner and the loser.
Yes. So you're going to pick the winner or the loser of the game, but you're going to have that plus minus there. So that plus is going to be for your underdog, and that minus line is going to be for your favorite.
So you bet on your favorite.
Yes.
It's not going to be the Bulls. You bet on your favorite, and you bet a dollar. You might get 80 cents back.
Sure.
So $1.80 back.
Right.
Right? As opposed to, but if you bet on the underdog, you might get $1.20 back for your dollar.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. The best way I explain it is just easy math. If the team was minus -120, so they're the favorite, you have to bet like $120 to win your $100 back.
Yeah.
And the vice versa. You know, if you get the plus sign, they're plus +150. You bet $100, you get $150 in return.
Okay. All right. So you got that. So football, NBA basketball, and college sports are bettable, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, there was some concern about that. What's the safeguard in there?
So anything Illinois-wise, when it comes to college sports, we're not going to be taking any action
so
on.
So Northwestern, Illinois, any of that stuff, including all sports,
yes.
Football, basketball.
Yeah.
Right.
Any collegiate sport, no action will be taken that has to deal with Illinois teams. So
okay.
Even if they're away, they're home, any action we cannot take in Illinois.
Got it. So is there, like, can people bet on, like, the littler sports in college, too, or no?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like lacrosse or swimming? I mean, I don't know. What's available?
College-wise, you have to see what the system that we're going to be using offers.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
baseball
see,
probably
I
might be on
I would think
there.
Baseball, maybe, you know. Mostly it is that basketball, football. And then down the line, we could see what other sports are going to offer for the college.
And women's level. Basketball, too?
Yeah.
Ross, how does it work if someone wanted to reserve seats or get a group? Like, can people do that?
Yeah. Ross, Kevin wants to actually come in here, and he's gonna put a bill in your hand while you're standing here. It's not going to be the bill you think it is,
sure.
By the way. It does start with a one,
right?
But it doesn't have any of those numbers after it. So let's talk
well,
about
that's what a lot of people want to do. They do want to go
do.
To a group of friends.
What can
and,
you do?
Yeah, post
yeah.
Up.
I mean, even now, before you know, the sports betting becomes legal, and we do have that option to bet the sports. You can for bigger events rent seats from us. You know, there's.
Are those seats up right now at Rivers Casino?
Oh, yeah. Everything's up. You have people coming in watching games.
That's what I'm saying. I had friends do that. They were just hanging out watching
just waiting for the betting to start.
They were just waiting.
Any minute now, the betting window's going to open. I'm going in.
Yeah, we just had the big fight against Wilder and Fury. We were selling seats for that.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, bigger events, stuff like that. On a normal day, you come in and enjoy the sports book without, you know, reserving a seat or anything like that.
Lovely casino. I know it's very rare that you can say those two words next to each other, lovely and casino. Because it's always, you go to Las Vegas, first time anybody ever goes to Las Vegas, they're thinking, oh my God, it's like Sinatra, it's like this, it's like that, and then you end up, you know, I don't even want to name the casinos, but you walk into a casino that's like a legacy casino, and you're like, oh my God, what happened here? It's like post-apocalyptic. But Rivers is really kind of like that. Rivers is the kind of casino you walk into, and it's kind of what you expect in your mind's eye.
Yeah, that's from day one, really.
Right.
And we're just going to expand that with the sportsbook. Like I said, that Vegas-style sportsbook with the stadium row seatings, the bar right there.
Feels really high-end. There's a Hugo's there.
Hugo's Frog Bar.
Yes.
Very good.
Which is, I mean, that's. I have friends who just go, don't even gamble, just go to the Hugo's there.
Yeah.
Because you got the Gibson's and Rosemont, and you got the Hugo's there.
Yeah.
And the Hugo's, I did that a couple of weeks ago. I just went with these guys. We're going to go to the casino for lunch. I'm like, what? Oh, Hugo's. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
We're good. So the food is great. There is also a very, as we mentioned before, in this coronavirus moment, obviously you guys are, most of the businesses that are hosting a lot of people in a day, you're going to a new protocol for this, so everybody's going to try their best to make sure that the environment is as clean as possible. But there's still people got to get out, and they want to do things,
sure.
Right? And if you're able to turn this thing around, Ross, and it's on you, my friend.
Thank you.
This is it. There's one guy that this is going. I want this ready for March Madness. Now, when is Selection Sunday?
So not this week, but next Sunday.
Next 15th, Sunday, yeah. The 15th. And then the tournament starts on that Thursday, right? The 19th?
Yeah, there'll be a few play-in games that Tuesday.
Right,
Wednesday,
that's right.
But the real big tournament starts on that Thursday.
Well, those play-in games always can get you, too. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh boy. That's tough action right there.
Yeah.
I hate to sound like a degenerate, though I am. Will there be horse betting there, too?
No, unfortunately not. So just right now, the sports book is just going to cover the sports.
Right. Like in Vegas, you can bet on horses.
Yeah, you can do both
tracks.
Vegas.
Yeah,
but right now, Illinois, we're focusing, at least Rivers, we're focusing on.
Yeah, but you still have Arlington if you want to bet on horses.
Mm-hmm.
When the Arlington meet opens up in the, you know, but it's not too far from there.
No.
When it opens up in May, you can bet on all the all the other tracks around the country that are running as well. Man, I sound. You know what? I'm disappointing myself. I hope my mother's not listening to this. Although she's a bit of a degenerate, too. So that's how it goes. All right, betrivers.com. That's where it's all going to start. So congratulations on this. I think a lot of people in the area are, been looking forward to this for a really long time. And Indiana, they started already with it, and they made $500 million out of it already. I mean, it's ridiculous. And they only started it a couple months ago. So it's about time that Illinois... If I could just urge the powers that be in Illinois to come up with a way, it doesn't have to be perfect the first time out because these things always get amended along the way. Yeah. But let's, while the sun is still shining here, for as long as the sun maybe shines, it's getting a little cloudy, Ross. I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's some concern about the economic people are watching the Dow. You might be better at a craps table, and you might be better during the tournament if you could do like a three-team parlay of the favorites. Do never take the fifth seed. The fifth seed and the seventh seed always seem to go out early.
True. So that is true.
There you have it. Thank you so much, Ross. Really appreciate it. Ross Hensone. Rivers Ross is his nickname. When you see him, as a matter of fact, now, Kev, you bring your buddies over to Rivers Casino because you don't live too far from there.
Not at all. Always
come on
there.
Down, and you walk in, and you get to say, "No big deal, I know Rivers Ross."
I'd like to speak to Rivers Ross, please. He's got seating for me.
Right, he was on my radio show. I'm on a little radio show on WGN. It's called the Kevin Powell Show with Lauren Lapka. Oh, and Rokon.
He said a free round of drinks when we first sit down.
Oh, see.
Give him
see how that goes? Well, come on. Yeah. I mean, just imagine he's at a craps table. They're constantly feeding me drinks at a craps table. Oh, yeah. And I don't know how can a casino afford that? I have no idea, Ross.
I wish I could figure it out.
I'd like to be the accountant and trying to figure all of that out. It's going to be a ton of fun. Well, congratulations. Thank you so much for doing this. All right. Coming up on the program, let me tell you, we're going to tell you the three things you need to know in the 5 o'clock hour. It's starting right at 5 o'clock. Also, now listen to this. This is going to be really interesting. We're going to talk to a guy named George Valdez, who is the author of Narco Mindset. This guy was a drug lord in Central America. And now he's a doctor. He's out of it. He's out of the whole thing. And he's telling the story of how people get wrapped up into it, what it does, how it works. It's fascinating. That's coming your way in the 6 o'clock hour. So stay tuned for that. Right now, we've got the news standing by from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom and Kim Gordon coming your way in 2 minutes. Rokon Show on 720 WGN. All right. Here are things you should know at 5 o'clock. And the first most important thing is the stock market, which did not do well today. Down almost 800 points, 785 points. And by the time the market closed, there was a settling in of this notion that whatever happened yesterday when it went up 1,300 points is not a permanent direction. Because I think there were a lot of people who yesterday were thinking, okay, all right, we had this terrible week, but now there's control over this. There's a sense that everything is going to be okay. And then the Fed comes out and drops the interest rate by 50 basis points, half a percentage point. That's a big move. The problem is the Fed, when they did it, they called it an emergency move. And the stock market went, what? They were pricing in a drop yesterday, which is they were trying to get ahead of the drop. That's why it went up 1,300 points. At least that's what that's the argument that a lot of analysts are making. We talked to Susan Schmidt from Aviva Investors earlier today. Here's what she said.
Coronavirus has definitely spooked the markets. They're not sure how to handle this, and you're seeing a massive risk-off move. The Fed tried to respond today. We had all the central banks around the world meeting yesterday and talking about taking steps to support their individual economies. The Fed was part of that meeting, and the market rallied yesterday hearing about this coordination among central banks. That reversed today when the Fed came out and said, we're going to reduce interest rates, as you said, by 50 basis points, half a percent. It was initially comforting to the market, but the market being as nervous as it is right now, it then said, oh my gosh, does this mean we're going into a recession, and backed right off.
So that's really the question, is will there be a recession here? And a little bit later on in the day, we talked to Rana Peruhar, who told us, should we write to the Financial Times, that there is concern about that there's going to be a pulling back. Is it going to be a full recession? Is it going to be a dip? We're already at correction point here, which is one of those things when you drop 10% of the value of the stock market, and people say, well, okay, this is not a recession. This is just the market taking a breather, correcting itself, and going down. Sometimes the markets can have, as Warren Buffett once called it, irrational exuberance. Sometimes they're pricing themselves because they're happy and they're on cocaine, I think is what happens too on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. And then they come back to earth. The problem, however, is that now there is real concern, according to both of these folks who we talked to today. There is real concern about an interruption in the supply chain. There's a real concern about products actually being able to be sold. There are so many things, especially in the biopharm world and the over-the-counter biopharm world, whether it's pain-relieving drugs, you know, your Motrins and things like that, or gastrointestinal drugs, things like that, that have product that is made in China, and it's not made here. So there will be supply chain interruptions. And hopefully not. China's trying to get all of their stuff back up and going, but will it be in time to save this market? And hopefully the coronavirus will do what everybody is hoping it will do. It'll start to fade, and it will be a more contained outbreak. It's going to grow before then and now, but how long will that arc be? So that's what happened in the markets today. That's what you need to know at 5 o'clock. Right now, we got the weather, the sports, and the traffic. Here's Kim Gordon. Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, let's talk about the Olympics. Uh-oh. I don't know how I feel about this, but the decision has been made. The 2020 Olympics will happen. They will be played. They will be contested as planned, despite the coronavirus. Over the last couple of weeks, there have been a lot of talks. You got the International Olympic Committee, and those are guys, as we learned here in Chicago the hard way, the International Olympic Committee is just a bunch of guys who got their hand out looking for something. They want cash or they want hookers. And somehow, I think with the coronavirus, neither of those things really, that didn't play for them. But they figure that Japan has got a lot of money invested in this. And if they were to maybe cancel the Olympics, that would cost them a lot of money. And so we're going to decide not to cancel the Olympics, and yeah, maybe we get something out of it. That's the way I look at the International Olympic Committee. But they have decided to do this. The IOC exec, Dick Pound, that is his name.
What's his name?
Dick Pound.
Okay, I just want to clarify.
So, listen, don't you think that Dr. and Mrs. Pound would have told little Dick, hey, go with Richard at
hey,
some point?
What? You know what? Dick Pound, don't mess around.
Said a decision should come in late May, and the IOC's Mark Adams put all the speculation to rest during a press briefing, saying the games will in fact kick off July 24th.
And all the advice we're getting from all the competent authorities, and the most important one is the UN recognized lead in this, which is the WHO. As you know, there's not even an international travel ban, and still not a pandemic announced. All the advice we're getting is that the games can and will go ahead. There are some issues and complications with qualification, although thankfully National Olympic Committees and IFs are working very closely together, and we seem so far to be doing a very good job of making sure athletes can compete. So at this precise time, we are working, moving ahead, and expecting the games to begin on the 24th of July.
All right. There he is. That's not Dick Pound, by the way. That's Mark Adams. I don't think they want Dick Pound actually going out and making statements, because when they show him on TV, they got to put his name on the bottom. And then people laugh.
People are going to watch, though.
And even little kids start to laugh. Right? They're like, oh, I see that. I get that. All right. Well, it's going to go. I understand that you don't want to cancel the Olympics over nothing. Right? The Olympics have been going on forever and ever and ever, and they've survived, you know, wars and insurgencies and all kinds of problems. But there have been, you know, throughout the years, there have been some stupid moments where, you know, you had boycotts, where the Americans boycotted in 1980, and then the Russians returned the favor back to us. And sometimes it does get too caught in the politics, which is not exactly what the Olympic spirit is all about and the whole idea of the Olympics. And that is a lot of fun, even though there's a bunch of sports that nobody's ever heard of and only cares about once every 4 years, whether it's in the Winter Olympics, which even has even goofier sports, or the Summer Olympics. Summer Olympics, at least you kind of understand it. Like a javelin, you go, okay, guys used to throw a javelin. They probably did that in the original Olympics. They throw a stick. Throw the stick as far as you possibly can. Okay, I get it. But in the Winter Olympics, somebody with a broom and a thing that looks like a tea kettle and all that, I mean, who needs that? I've never understood it. But it is a huge economy. These host cities, as we knew here in Chicago when we were trying to get them for 2016, we knew that this was the money that you have to spend, the money that Tokyo is spending on this. And Tokyo has hosted the Olympics before, so they know exactly what goes into this and the money that they've already spent. And they're just hoping that by the summer, because there is some school of thought here, it's an emergent school of thought, that there may this virus, in terms of its spread, may peak and valley here. And generally, when people get outside and away from each other, when they're not confined indoors, which is starting to happen now around the world, they are able to be a little less of a vector for the people around them. So that's at least the hope here. So we'll see. July 24th, they say there's going to be an Olympic game, and you're going to have the whole thing, and everybody walking around. Everybody's supposed to participate this year. Except the Russians, right? Don't they have to? They have to take part not under the Russian flag. Isn't that what happened? Because wasn't there a suspension of the Russian Olympic dealy?
Mm-hmm.
Because there was I don't know, just like a ton of doping and cheating that was going on. Yeah. I also understand the Houston Astros are not going to be allowed to take part.
No trash cans at this year's Olympics.
In the Olympics as well. All right. And then there's this that you need to know. I need to share this with you. Opening statements began today in Cook County Court of the man who was accused of killing the Chicago Police Commander Paul Bauer 2 years ago. A little over 2 years ago, downtown Daly Center. You remember the commander was leaving a meeting at City Hall. On his radio, it squawked that there was an assailant, or not an assailant, but there was a suspect running away from police. He saw the guy as it was described. He chased the guy. They tumbled down a flight of stairs that go down below the Daly Center there, and they went into that area. No one saw what happened, but seven shots were fired. And Paul Bauer never unholstered his weapon. And there was an opening statement today, which absolutely just, it blows my mind that you would try this. Risa Lanier is the assistant state's attorney, and she told jurors that Shamari Leggett, who is the actual accused here, that's his name, executed Paul Bauer after the foot pursuit.
On the afternoon of February 13th, 2018, on-duty Chicago Police Commander Paul Bauer took what would be his final drive in his police-issued SUV. He would answer the call and perform the functions of a Chicago police officer for the very last time. Because for Commander Bauer, what began as a trip to lunch and to afternoon meetings following a morning training session ended with his death. As he was brutally murdered in a stairwell outside of the State of Illinois building, the Thompson Center downtown, by this defendant, Shamari Leggetti, who after fleeing from the police, pulled out a gun, pointed it directly at Commander Bauer and fired seven times, shooting the commander six.
That is the narrative that pretty much everybody agrees on. However, this is a court case, and there is a defense, and here's the defense attorney, Scott Kamen, and he painted a very, very different picture.
This case is a tragedy. Every time a police officer is killed in the line of duty, it's a tragedy. But this is a clear case of self-defense. Commander Bauer, ignored the transmissions that told him not to chase after anybody. He just wasn't, he didn't have his uniform on, showing rather. He didn't have his uniform showing, he didn't have his badge showing, he didn't have anything that would indicate he was a cop, okay? That really determined what happened and what the tragedy, because Commander Bauer was undergoing a training with other officers, and he was taking a break for lunch. He was going to go have lunch with his wife. He was on his way to have lunch. So, I mean, that's a real, that makes it even more of a tragedy. But Shamar Ligeti was doing the same thing.
Okay. You can tell by that the attorney was even having trouble believing his own argument. It was halting. It was a little discombobulated. The fact of the matter is that none of what he just said is actually accurate. He was in his uniform. He had a radio. You know how they've got that radio that's a microphone that's also the speaker? It was squawking up on his left shoulder as he was chasing him. There is no chance, no chance in my opinion, that Shamar Ligeti had any idea that he wasn't a police officer. This is not some random guy chasing him down the street. And he wasn't called off. They just said they're not sure where the guy was. And Paul Bauer decided he saw him. He had eyes on him and he went after him because the other guys had lost him. And there was, and the argument is going to come up here, that Shamari was being chased because he was publicly urinating. Well, that is the reason that the police stopped. But they also knew that this guy was armed and there had been shots fired. This is, they saw him originally on Lower Wacker Drive urinating on the wall. They stopped. They wanted to talk to him because they were looking for a guy who fit his description because a number of shots had been fired just minutes before down on Lower Wacker Drive. And this guy took off running. Now, running is not, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled that running is not an admission of guilt. But it is certainly an indication they didn't want to do it. And it's so insulting, this argument, that he had no idea. But what else do they have except to plead guilty and maybe try to see if, I mean, I don't even want to say the option here. This is just, it's overwhelming at times when you have to actually confront what happens in these court cases. All right, well, let's see what the jury does. Ro Con Show on 720 WGN. All right, our own Ryan Burrow. It's Super Tuesday. We haven't even mentioned that yet today. And this is where one-third of the Democratic delegates are going to actually get apportioned out after tonight's round of many, many, many states voting, including the state of Vermont, which is where Bernie Sanders is from. And our own Ryan Burrow stood in back of Bernie Sanders while he cast his vote, assuming he was casting it for himself. If he's smart, he'd cast it for Joe Biden, but that's a separate issue. What, how did that go down, Ryan?
Oh, it was a mess. You know, he pulled up in his Subaru Forester with his wife. We in the media were waiting out for him. Yes, pulled into it. He got rock star parking too. Not intentionally. Just someone pulled out as he was about to pull in.
I would imagine that he's one of those guys who goes in the handicap zone, and he goes, "Don't worry, look at me. I can barely walk."
No. There wasn't. I mean, he had one. Maybe there were two handlers who were kind of pushing us to the side because it got really chaotic in front of the community center with all these microphones and cameras. But he got in there. He voted. He was in and out in probably about 5 minutes, came out and spoke to us. I didn't mention Joe Biden specifically, didn't mention Michael Bloomberg or Elizabeth Warren or Mayor Pete or Amy Klobuchar. Just went straight at Trump and made the case that he's been saying for, the last 8 years or whatever years, that he is the best candidate with the best grassroots campaign effort. And has the most excitement involved to be the next president of the United States.
Yeah, there's this whole political argument that the excited electorate are the people that are going to come out and vote. There is, however, a demographic reality here, which is that he does have a lot of young, even though he's the oldest guy in the race, he's got a lot of young voters. Young voters,
I'm
though,
looking at them right now, yeah.
Yeah, young voters have a tendency not to show up at the polls, though. I mean, they'll go out and they'll work for the candidate, and they will, you know, they'll go on social media and they'll work for the candidate, and they'll have parties at their house, and they'll tell everybody who will listen, including their parents, because it drives them nuts, that they want Bernie to be a part of it, but the Bernie bros don't have the numbers on election day. And so we'll see. Now, in a primary, it's a different deal. Because, you know, the number of people in a primary who are voting is very small compared to the general election. It's less than half. And so when you get a situation like this, when it's a bunch of, before, you know, it was a cattle call of people, now it's down to four, right? You've got on the ballot in Vermont and throughout most of Super Tuesday, all those names are still on there, though, even though there's only four sure. in the race.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people about what happened yesterday with Senator Klobuchar and Mayor Pete going and backing Joe Biden. And a lot of these Bernie supporters feel kneecapped, I guess. I mean, they didn't see that coming. They didn't expect all of the rank and file to necessarily fall directly behind Joe Biden, at least so quickly. But to some extent, he's trying to make that one of his strengths is, look, I'm not the candidate that the establishment is falling behind. In fact, we're making them nervous. And that's been his message over the last 24, 48 hours is, look what they're doing. Look what I'm doing. Stick with me because we're fighting the good fight. And, you know, ultimately, I talked to most of these people. I would say probably 7 out of 10 of them say that regardless of who the nominee is, they just want Trump out. But there are probably about 3 out of 10 of them that said, you know, I got to think about this a little bit because I really want Bernie. And if it's not Bernie, I just don't know.
Okay. Are you in Burlington, Vermont? Is that where you are right now?
Yeah, just outside. It's Essex Junction inside of a convention hall.
Sure, that's lovely. All right, now I want to ask you a question. You were standing right in back. I saw the video on your social media stream. You're standing right in back of them. I have noticed something during the debates that Bernie Sanders, A, his hair is never properly coiffed. It's always everywhere. But I noticed that he also has, I don't know if it's dandruff or it's just he's molting onto his own jacket. Like little specks of white on his shoulders. Did you notice that, Ryan Burrow?
I did not notice any molting. I'm sorry. I looked really hard, and I did not notice that.
Because I noticed it like on TV. And it always looks like he's got some, like he needs one of those roller deals, like a lint roller. Maybe Mrs. S can run out there during the commercial breaks and lint roll him. All right. I would imagine they also have cats. They seem like the kind of people that have got cats. So he'd always have cat hair on his dark suit.
I'm surprised he didn't come on a bike. I mean, he was driving, right?
Oh, we'll see what happens tonight, but I think it's going to be...
You know, the Divvy bikes here have Ben and Jerry's logos on them. I'm serious. They're equivalent to the Divvy bikes.
The Ben and Jerry bikes.
Sponsored by Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. It's Vermont. Remember, this guy's from Vermont. From Vermont!
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It really is.
Right.
It's very nice.
There are more moose than people. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it. There he is, Ryan Burrow, WGN Radio and ABC News in right outside Burlington, Vermont, we should say. Let's get our information package, Kim Gordon. Okay. We are now joined by our chief legal analyst of the Rokan Show, unpaid position. Mike Monaco is with us. You just picked up. I like to say that the Rokan Show gets results, Mike. You know how I say that.
Right.
You you exactly. are now representing Julian Bueno, who we talked to 6 days ago on this radio program, and he told us a story about losing his brother.
Oh, it's a terrible story, amazing story.
Richard's Bar in the River West area. That is, it's a bar that a lot of people in the Chicago area are familiar with. If they have not been there, they've been by there. It's a legendary place because not only... It's legendary because it's just a dive of a dive of a dive. You walk in and it is like, it is. And I mean, it's like, it's just one of those really unique places. It's a throwback in time. And there's still people smoking at the bar. And they don't seem, nobody seems to stop them in doing that. So this incident happened last Monday night into Tuesday morning. It was this young man, Kenny Pinarimos, who was celebrating something, and his brother, who we met, who is now your client, right? Julian Bueno, who was also celebrating he got offered two jobs, one at a boxing gym and another at a high school to be a coach.
That's That's true.
And they were together, and Kenny was, you know, kind of a younger, sort of, you know, more full of life kind of guy. And, you know, he was out dancing with one of the patrons at the bar. And there's no real dance floor there, just sort of dancing. And apparently there was a confrontation with the assumed assailant here, and they got into it with each other. And then the who's now been described as a 30-year-old former Marine, was pushed out of the bar by the brother that we talked to. He goes, we don't see him for a couple of minutes here. And then young Kenny goes outside, and within seconds stumbles back in, bloodied. His brother runs to his aid. He realizes he's been fatally stabbed by what we learn later is a box cutter across right about his collarbone, right around the area where, you know, there's all those arteries that you know, will kill somebody within minutes if they're pierced, sliced open. And then your client, Julian Bueno, has to make a decision. Is he going to hold his brother for his final breath, or is he going to go get the guy? So he goes on and gets the guy, tackles the guy on the street. The guy was trying to run away. Police arrive.
He still had a knife, and he still had the box cutter in his hand.
Well, had he not thrown it underneath the car?
Now my client stopped him.
So
he threw it under the car when the police came.
Yes. And that's so your client stopped him. Now, what's going to happen here? Because we've been asking for justice in this case, because this is a fairly easy diagnosis. The police interviewed this guy, the accused assailant, the presumed assailant. They did not charge him, and then
let him go.
And then they, not police charging him, that would have been the state's attorney didn't charge him. They let him go,
right.
And now
yeah.
they've issued an arrest warrant, and he's missing. So
right.
Where are we now?
That's exactly where we are. I assume the police are looking for him because he's accused of this murder, and it's something that apparently the night of the event he claimed that it was self-defense, which is clearly untrue. The young man who's only 23 years old, Kenneth Paterimos, went outside, and shortly thereafter, he came bouncing in because he had been stabbed to death by this fellow outside the bar. So the fellow either was waiting for him or saw him and just attacked him as soon as he came outside. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. And what's curious is why the police ever let him go. But they let him go, and
well, they can only hold you so long. They can only hold you for 48 hours before you're either charged or not, right?
Yeah, but he could have been charged. He could have been charged.
Does this fall?
There are people. There are people who, you know, there are so many murders in this town. Okay, but how many? Whoever there are, 800, whatever there are a year. A lot of those folks are arrested right away. I shouldn't say a lot. Several of them. Many of them are arrested right away, and they're held. They're held, even if they claim that it's self-defense. They're held.
Right.
And here, there was no evidence of self-defense.
Now, let's explain the process here, because they're being held. The police, the detectives do the interviewing, and the Chicago police detectives also interviewed the brother here, right?
Right.
And
right.
When he was on the show with us last week, the brother said that he wasn't being, he felt that there was disrespect during the interview process with the police toward him. He felt that they were looking at him sideways about exactly what had happened here. And that can happen in an interview. I mean, there's a certain amount of role playing that goes on in that, but still,
in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and he's a victim. His brother has just been murdered, and his brother was dying in his arms before he stood up. And I think in a completely heroic move, ran after the bad guy.
I was going to say he's a hero. It was heroic to run after this fellow, catch him right away, throw him on the ground. And hold them there and yelling for the police until the police come, and the police did come right away, which is great, and I'm glad the state's attorney has brought charges against the fellow whose name I think is Tansy, he's his last name, and I don't know much about him. You say he's a former Marine. I had heard stories also that he had a history of arrests, but I'm not sure of that either. So.
Yeah. That's been reported. So we'll just have to wait to see when if he's ever actually caught, because now he's in the wind. And
right.
The question is, I think the question, it's incumbent, and again, this is one murder out of over the last week in this period of time. There have been a dozen murders in Chicago. That's how this goes. But this is a murder that has caught the attention of people because yes. This isn't the sorts of murders that are more common in Chicago, which is gang rivalries and young men shooting other young men based on either their business that they're doing on the street or their gang affiliation.
Yes.
And most Chicagoans feel disconnected from that. Feel as though they're not that's not their world, and that's a totally separate parallel universe.
That's a good point. This is something that anybody can relate to,
right? This is something that, and it's caught the attention, and it's just amazing to me that in this case that the felony review folks, and I know that the state's attorney's workers, this is not Kim Fox's fault directly, I don't think, but that there is such an attitude now. That came from upon high in the state's attorney's office, that they're just letting people go left and right. That's the sense that I get. And this is just one of those cases where you go, whoa, 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 whoa. I just cannot imagine
how they
I mean, you're the lawyer. I'm not a lawyer, but I just can't imagine if you were taking a statement how the when the felony review folks from the Cook County State's attorneys arrive, and they're the ones who have to approve the charges so they can
be
held.
They were there that night.
Yeah.
They were there that night.
I don't know how that story didn't add up for them. So.
Yeah, all right. I know.
So what,
it's a tough case, but thanks for calling.
All right.
Everything else okay?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. This is not a personal phone call. Thank you. There's a moment there I thought he was going to ask me for dinner. All right, let's see how this goes. We're going to continue to watch this because this, I think, is one of the test cases, an endemic example of what is happening in this town and what needs to be addressed. We have got the WGN News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes. All right, we will do that. It's a Rokan show right here on 720 WGN. All right, I want to bring you up to date on what's happening on Super Tuesday. You've got some of the craziest stuff you've ever seen that Mike Bloomberg did today. That's all I have to say about this. As predicted, Joe Biden's going to win Virginia. Bernie Sanders is from Vermont. He's going to win Vermont, our own. Ryan Burrow was in Vermont right behind him while he was voting for himself. That might have been the thing that took him over the top. And it's going to be, I'm going to predict right now. You know, I'm a master predictor right now, as well as a master debater, that there is going to be a groundswell for Biden tonight because people are moving now toward him, the people in the Democratic Party who were like, why is there a socialist running? The guy doesn't even call himself a Democrat. Why is he running? And I think that even though Bernie definitely has a lot of energy, he's got a lot of younger voters, and that is what it is. But I think now it's all kind of coming toward Joe Biden. The only problem with Joe Biden is that if you are a Democrat, or if you are even as today what happened, there was in Virginia, a Republican who was a conservative Republican commentator on CNN said he was going to vote for Biden. I'm riding with Biden is what he put on social media because there's the, you know, Never Trump wing of the Republicans, and they are more likely to go with a Bloomberg or a Biden. But what I'm going to tell you about Mike Bloomberg right now is going to tell you why he is completely unqualified to be the president of the United States. I want to take you to the state of Virginia. And this is a problem. They have Virginia and California, two of the biggest states, and Texas, all tonight. These guys are running around. Bloomberg is at one of his campaign headquarters in the state of Virginia. And there's a bunch of pizza boxes that are all lined up. You can look this up. It's on the social media. You can see this on the social media. He goes to the pizza box. He opens the pizza box. He sticks his hand in. Then he sticks his other hand in and he's pulling a piece of crust or cheese off the top. I can't really tell exactly what it is. I think it might be where he's squeezing the cheese together and he's going to have it because he doesn't want to have carbs. It's a very common move. And he pops this in his mouth and then places something back. I think he takes the piece of pizza, you know, the crust piece, puts it back in the box without the cheese on top of it. Doesn't keep it for himself or throw it out. Puts it back in the box. He's paying for this pizza. He licks his fingers, and then he touches one of those coffee, you know, those cardboard things that are the coffee pours that you get, like at Dunkin' Donuts. And he's just standing there. And there's people around him, you know, with cameras and taking pictures and phones and all of that, because he's Mike Bloomberg.
Well, we're on the verge of a pandemic?
Yes! That's the point! Does this guy even get what he's doing? How do we know he doesn't have the coronavirus? And why is he licking his hand? Well, first of all, right. I mean, I know you're a billionaire. And I know you just spent $500 million buying television ads that are going to net you 7% of the vote on Super Tuesday. So congratulations. You're a better businessman than you are a politician. But one thing you got to do, Mike Bloomberg, is you got to not. In the middle of a pandemic, you got to not take a pizza out of a box with your hands and then return part of that to the box, lick your fingers, and touch the coffee dispenser while there's cameras watching you. I want people to look at the... Can we put this up somewhere? It's my Facebook page, right? Okay. Let's put it up on the Rokon Facebook page. It's you, when you see it, you're like, I cannot believe what I'm looking at. And again, while people are watching, now, okay, it's one thing. Let's all admit that we've all done something kind of like this at some point. You know, you're walking by, you're hungry, you've been on the road, you're not exactly sure what's going on. You decide you're going to, like, you know, stick your hand in and get a piece of pizza, and, you know, whatever. But you're not. And I've done that where I just take the cheese off the top and maybe it's got some olives or some sausage or something that's kind of fun. And then you just have that and you throw the, you feel like you're not actually eating pizza if you just eat the cheese and not the crust. It's not true, but it's, you know, it's one of those things. Keto, very keto. You don't put it back in and you don't do it in front of other people, right? Like the whole world is watching. Like, the Iranians are watching him do this. Putin is watching him do this. The Chinese are watching him do this. And then they're going to, this is the guy? I mean, the Chinese, right? They're all running around in hazmat suits. And this guy's just standing there in his pink-purple sweater. Which, again, that's not... What are you doing? What are you doing? All right. The one thing we will say, though, about Joe Biden is that I take him more seriously when he keeps his aviators on. When he takes the aviators off, then I don't take him as seriously. He should keep the aviators on the whole time. He looks like Maverick's grandfather, you know, comes back. Or Jim Lovell when they come back from he's on the aircraft carrier when they come back and he's playing not himself. And he's watching Tom Hanks and he shakes his hand. Oh. All right. We'll come right back. Right now, I want to hear what the information package is with Kim Gordon. Now it's your
Get Real in the Morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team, weekdays 4 to 10.
I can't unsee what I saw in this video of Michael Bloomberg eating the pizza with his fingers and then putting the crust back in the box and licking his fingers and just walking around aimlessly. Have you noticed that this particular election cycle is like when you go visit grandpa at the nursing home? It's like the day room. These guys are all walking. They all get dressed up to go into the day room and then get spoon fed. That's what this is looking like to me. It's just this is where we are left. This is what's happening.
You know the internet, so many smart and creative people out there. I'm just waiting for someone to turn that into a video of his head like on a turtle body. He like pokes his head out to grab the pizza because he looks like a turtle so much.
I'm more offended by him just completely butchering that pizza. What are you doing to it?
Right. And don't take a piece and put a piece back. You see, that's a billionaire move right there. That's a billionaire figures, listen, if anybody complains, I'm going to buy a pizza shop. Right? That's what I'm going to do. I got this handled. I don't need to have people tell me that I can't touch their pizza. I bought this pizza. And if I want to touch it, I'm going to touch it. And I'm going to lick my fingers and touch something else. I don't care if there's a viral outbreak.
Yeah, the common man is not butchering a pizza like that.
No! You take the piece, right? You get a plate, you get a napkin, you do the whole thing. I'm sorry. I know I just talked about this for 5 minutes before. I can't get it out of my head. And I cannot get out of my head this notion that on this election day, which Michael Bloomberg, he was a good mayor of New York. I will say that. Spent a lot of time in New York during his reign, and he was respected, and he made that city even better. There was a lot of thought that Giuliani had cleaned the place up, and it was going to be that any mayor was going to come in and screw it up, and Bloomberg actually made it even better. And the property values went up, and it was a great it's just one of the most amazing cities in the world, without question. And Mike Bloomberg has something to do with that. However, he doesn't seem all that interested in being president of the United States. I don't know if it's just my imagination, but he gets up there and he's like, he's spending his money, but he's worth billions with an S. Billions. More than $10 billion of dollars. And so when he spends $500 million of his own money to run this campaign, which he basically has done so far, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter to him because he still has, let's just be incredibly frugal here and call it $10 billion. He still has $9.5 billion to go. He's got plenty more than that, though. And the fact is that this money he's spending is a rounding error for him when he's doing his taxes. So go ahead, spend your money, do your deal. But he's disconnected from everything. He just doesn't, it doesn't seem like his heart is in it. He just wants to do it because he's worried. Maybe it is about him being worried about Trump, or maybe he wants to go in a different direction. He has given money to Republicans and Democrats and all kinds of people, you know, throughout his career. He's not really a partisan politician. He's a guy that understands the power of the executive, whether you're a business executive, you're a mayor, you're a president, whatever it is, and he wants it in responsible hands. He doesn't think Donald Trump's responsible. Okay, fine. That's his position. But act like you're interested. If you really want to do this, do so. You got to go to media training. And a guy like that doesn't think he owns a media company. Why does he have to go to media training? Because when he's talking, you're like, oh my God, why is this guy lecturing me? And who the hell is he? And then he's just physically weird. I mean, he doesn't comport himself with any kind of, it doesn't look like a leader. I know he is one.
There's like no emotion at all, whether good or bad.
Right.
That actually seems to be a trait with a lot of billionaires.
But I will say this. I have never, ever, ever seen a guy who's running for president, who was so ill-prepared for his first national debate appearance. I mean, he just basically went on stage and he did something of an excretory nature, is basically what he did. Just took a large, you know, whatever, on the stage because he had no idea that they were going to come after him. And he just stood there. And they said, oh, look, he did such a better job in the second debate. Okay. You couldn't do a worse job. If he had literally said nothing in the second debate, he would have done a 100% better job in the second debate. And now here he is standing there today with the pizza in his hand. And then he was asked, and he was in California in the morning, Virginia in the afternoon. Is my understanding, unless Virginia was yesterday. I don't know if this is a pizza incident yesterday, because now I'm sort of getting the sense that it was. It said that it was today. Was it yesterday? They're not sure. All right. Anyway, the point is, he was in California this morning. And he's walking around. He's being followed by a CNN reporter, and he said this.
How do you expect to do tonight?
I think we're going to do very well. Looking forward to it.
What are your expectations? Would a third place finish be good?
You know, if there's only three candidates, you can't do worse than that.
Well, there is Elizabeth Warren also.
I didn't realize she's still in. Is she?
Okay. So now here's the thing. That is being characterized throughout the media today as Mike Bloomberg being cutting and dismissive of Elizabeth Warren. Like it's a snotty remark. You know what that really is? He didn't know. That's what that really is. You can hear it in his voice. It's like he's asking the question. She's still in it, really? I thought she dropped out with the rest of the guys yesterday. Where is she? Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
What a world we live in. So we've got right now, let's see, he got 8% of the vote so far in Virginia. I'd like to do the, what I'd like to do, before this all set up, Super Tuesday, because he wasn't competitive in these other states, I'd like to see what Mike Bloomberg is, dollar per voter. That's always a good number. We're going to see what they spent per vote that they got. Because again, he has spent a reported $405 million so far.
In all the annoying ways, too. I mean, the ads are one thing, but to have people that are texting us in the area, I've seen people, I don't know if this is fully true. I've heard people say they've been offered money to have advertising, you know, if you're an Instagram influencer or something like
that,
or by wearing T-shirts. It's ridiculous.
I get a letter from him every day in my, in the mail. It's not like, one of those glossy things that we're all getting now. We can't, no matter what. I use it to clean up stuff in the house. I use it to, like, if I'm, like, dusting or something, I use it to capture all those big, big glossy things that we're getting. It's an actual letter. It looks like a letter. And I open it up, and it's from Mike. Hey, listen, neighbor, I'm Mike, and here's what I can do for you. And it looks like a typewritten letter. It makes it look like he's writing to me. And I'm like, you're not writing to me. It's been sort of ill-conceived from the very beginning. He's a smart guy. He's a dedicated guy. He's a great mayor. That's all true. He just literally peed away $405 million. And that makes me wonder. You just got to stop and think. And Joe Biden is going to mop up in some of these states. A big one to watch tonight if you're going to go home and watch this. Or you're at home now and you're thinking about what if you're going to watch the Super Tuesday thing. California's going to come in late. That's the one to watch because there's a lot of delegates in that one, and that's going to be something to behold. And that's the only thing that Bernie really can hold on to a big number of delegates with. So there you go. There's a little take. Coming up, we're going to talk to a former drug lord, a member of the Pablo Escobar cartel, who went straight. His story is absolutely amazing, and he's going to join us coming up after the news at the bottom of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Super Tuesday results analyzed by CBS Face the Nation moderator Margaret Brennan at 7:18. Wake up with us.
Bob Surratt, Radio Chicago, WGN.
Rokan Show. Right here, 7:20 WGN. Blackhawks hockey coming your way at the top of the hour as Kevin has been saying all day, this is a must-win circumstance for the Blackhawks. Every game now is a must-win game. There are no two ways around this. That's it, beginning, middle, and end. So that's correct?
I would say that's correct, for
that's
sure.
That's correct.
Got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. So this will be fun. And they're back in town now in March. They're going to be home for 11 games.
Yeah, 11 of the next 15 on home ice. That's after just playing three games at the United Center in February. So, you know, and the home ice advantage, I don't really know how much of it comes into play this season. They're 500 at home this year. They actually have a better road record. But you got to figure, when it's a stretch this long, they're going to benefit from it.
Yes, one would hope. They're going to need it. They need to win everything. They can, according to my mathematical brain, they can lose only one more game. They got to get a point at least in every game, if not two. That's it. Thank you. Good night and good luck. All right. I want to introduce you to somebody. This is a very interesting story. Dr. George Valdez. He is the author of Narco Mindset. And what Dr. Valdez, who's now a PhD, went to Wheaton College. We'll get to that in a second. We'll get to the redemption part of the story. But that comes later, George. I want to start with how you grew up and how you got involved in the Medellin cartel, Pablo Escobar, right? I mean, this is the narcos world that you found yourself in and found yourself a part of. So let's start at the very, very, very beginning. How old were you when you got introduced to him? Where were you? How did it start?
Okay, at the age, good to be with you, Ro. At the age of 17, I was the youngest employee for the Federal Reserve Bank. And I went to University of Miami full-time and studied and worked full-time at the bank. At the age of 20, when I was graduating, my accounting professor asked me to come work for him and do his Spanish class. He did not speak Spanish. So I agreed, and it was a chance for me to start my own office and have secretary, everything that I could, having been poor since the day I left Cuba at the age of 10. And the first client that I went to do was a little grocery store. It turns out that it was a front for a group that became known as the Medellin drug cartel. See, when you see Narcos and you see all these stories about Pablo Escobar, all these people came 6 years after us. We were part of the original group that ended up becoming called the Medellin cartel.
Okay, and where were you? Were you based in the United States? Were you one of the guys in the U.S.?
Yeah, I was living in Miami, and that was the whole premise of why they approached me, wanting me to handle all operations when I was 21 years old. I was living in Miami. I was clean cut. I've never done drugs in my life. I've never done anything. I didn't have a speeding ticket. Colombians, they were bright in Miami, so they're like, listen, we need you to handle all operations in the United States. And I go more in detail in my book, Coming Clean, but finally what I did is I made him an offer wanting to just get rid of him, leave me alone. I mean, I'm happy opening foreign bank accounts. There's no money laundering law. So I said, okay, guys, you want me to be part of the group? I get 20%. There were four guys. And you got to put up with the money for me because I ain't got a dollar. And I just thought they're going to look at this 20-year-old kid with braces that looked like a nerd and say, hey, kick my butt from Colombia all the way to the U.S. And lo and behold, they come and they say yes. And all of a sudden, I'm like, bro, I'm like, what the hell did I do? I mean, I don't even know what the freak cocaine looks like. I mean, where do I get it? Where do I kick it? Who the hell do I sell it to? You know, how do I do it with the money? But, you know, 6 months later, I was in charge of all U.S. operations and bringing in 85% of all the cocaine that came into America. And we're doing about $50 to $100 million a month in 1977.
So when you took over this part, I mean, you were in charge of finding the drug distributors, and then those guys would find the drug dealers on the street. I mean, how, if you weren't actually a part of this world, how did you make connections?
Because what ended up happening, remember, this time there was no, we were not even on the DEA radar, because cocaine was something that was for the rich and famous. Cocaine was for the Hollywood celebrities. And part of a company that I was involved with, this group that I was handling for him, was rebuilding this ship in California. And the guy kept harassing me and like, George, I know that's a cocaine. That boat's for cocaine. I'm like, Mel, no, it's not. No, it's not. Well, lo and behold, little did I know that's how naive I was. So all of a sudden, when they tell me that I'm in charge of all operations, I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a deal with these guys in California. And I'm going to give them a stupid price. They're going to say, are you out of your mind? I'm coming back to Colombia and say, guys, I tried, but I don't have a client. Well, lo and behold, they say yes. And before you know it, we're selling, you know, when I introduced cocaine into California, they were using it to mix with heroin. They didn't even know what cocaine was. Man. But our customers were Sammy, I mean, that's your name, no name, but, you know, the Hollywood celebrity, the very famous names that we know. Nobody in the cartel. Used drugs at this time.
Okay, George, hold on 1 second. We're talking to George Valdez, who has got an amazing story. He was a drug kingpin here in the United States and then had a total change in his life. We'll explain exactly what that was all about. But first, let's check in with the weather, the sports, and the traffic. Here's Kim Gordon. Rokan Show right here. We're talking to George Valdez, who is the author of Narco Mindset. And he was one of the biggest drug dealers in the United States of America in the 1970s into the 1980s. And cocaine dealers. Cocaine, you were a kingpin. You weren't the dealer. You weren't on the street doing this, George. You were a guy that actually was distributing, you know, bringing it in from the Medellin Colombian cartel and setting up shops, you know, throughout the United States. Now, in your book, you describe, and I'm, by the way, you can meet George Valdez here in Chicago. Let me get this in for people who wanted to see this. You're going to be giving a keynote address at Dominican University on Saturday, March 7th. It's coming up this Saturday at 3:30 in the afternoon. A Man Among Men, Chicago.com is the event that you're, that's the website for the event that you're doing. And it is the A Man Among Men conference at Dominican University, which is on Division Street in River Forest. So let's talk about, so at your height, how much money were you making, would you say?
You know, even from the beginning, in 1977, when I took over and we expanded our operations and we're doing, you know, 800 to 1,000 kilos a month, I was making between $1 million and $3 million a month. We were doing between $50 to $100 million a month, which in today's money, I don't know, is $1 billion. But it was an enormous amount of money, especially when I had left the Federal Reserve Bank, and I thought I had a high salary making $350 an hour.
So what? Because you're a kid, you're a Cuban Cuban extraction, right? Cuban immigrant growing up in Miami, and you went to school. You ended up finding your way into these guys somehow, and then next thing you know, you're making this $1 million a month. What were you doing with that money?
You know, and the thing about it, Ro, is like when we cross lines, we don't think that. When I first crossed that first line, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to open a foreign bank account, and then, okay, I'm going to handle operation, I'm going to do this for a month or two. You never think how things will escalate. And, you know, it got to a point was I started looking at my life, and, like, I had, you know, $1 million with the car. I had jets, yachts. I would buy a mansion everywhere that I visited frequently. I dated the most gorgeous woman in America, and I was miserable. And I look back now, writing Narco Mindset and Coming Clean, in retrospect, I realized, you know, I was in search of this American dream, this pseudo-American dream that society sells us that, hey, when you have a lot of money, if you have a lot of women, and if you have a lot of cars and all this luxury, you're going to be happy. Well, I had a ton of it, and I was miserable, and I couldn't understand why now that I reached the American dream, I was so miserable. And that's a message that I bring to a lot of fathers, and I bring to, in a lot of places that I speak at, is listen, the most important things in life, the wealthiest person, really not the one that has the most, but actually the one that needs the least. And, you know, we need to find satisfaction in everything but what society gives us. So we abandon our families, abandon our children, broken homes, all with the cheap excuse. Oh, look, I'm giving you what I never had. I'm giving you a vacation home. I'm giving you a fancy car. You know what? I've come to realize that our kids, all they want is our time. And we just don't seem to be able to go there. And then, you know, the old saying, Americans are, we're amazing at sacrificing our health to make our wealth. Then we spend every bit of that wealth to get the health back.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. All right. So what was the moment? What was the breakthrough moment here? You did eventually get caught by the government, right?
Well, the first time that I got arrested was I crashed over the jungles of Panama. I wasn't happy with making $1 million a month. So I worked out a deal with the government of Bolivia against my godfather who said, hey, listen, those people are animals. But I worked out a deal where I was going to be able to bring in 3 loads a month, and we were going to make about $7 million a month. And, you know, Ro, the thing, the money, that, looking back, the money was nothing because I remember my maid saying, can I clean behind the sofa? And I moved the sofa, and there's a bag with $700,000. I didn't even know how long it had been there. But I made this deal, and I got on an airplane, which I had never done. We crashed over the jungles of Panama. I was tortured by Noriega for 30 days to a point where every time I went to a bathroom, I passed blood. I got sent to the United States, and I was charged with heading the largest drug conspiracy in the history of America, given the highest bond ever, $7 million. I was just 23 years. I just turned 23 the month before. And I went to prison, and, you know, people say prison changed you. No, it didn't change me. I went to prison, and I came out, and I was just as powerful as before. In prison, I lived the life that I lived outside, except I didn't spend as much money. And then eventually...
I want you to explain that a little bit first. How long were you in prison for?
So the first time I was in prison for 5 years, which is the most they could give me on a conspiracy charge.
Okay.
And
you said you were living the life you were living outside. I mean, were there drugs? Were there women? What was going on?
Yeah. See, I never did any drugs. But yes, in prison, it's a microcosm of what you find anywhere in the world. I had a girlfriend in prison that worked there. And, I mean, I had sex every day. So to me, life was – and I was young and crazy and wild. But when I got out, I noticed that the world had changed. It wasn't, we were businessmen. We were not violent. We didn't carry guns. We wore a suit. We all had company. When I got out, I realized Pablo Escobar came into scene because I got out in 85. And then the world had drastically changed. But I went back because I had this hunger to get my power back. And I did. But then within 2 years, two components. Number one, I had a mother that when she found out, and this is a really, really important message for your listeners. I had a mother that when she found out I was a drug dealer, she came up to me and she was devastated, and she didn't stop telling me, son, what you do doesn't please God. You have destroyed us. We left everything in Cuba to give you an opportunity, to give you a life, and you just threw it away as a criminal. But then immediately, Rose, she would say, what do you want for dinner tonight? So my mother was tough love, but I define it by tough on me, but love me. So when the day I realized that I had it, I couldn't deal with this anymore. It was through an experience I detailed in Coming Clean, about my little daughter knocking, and I'm partying in my 15,000 square foot mansion with this Hollywood celebrity, and getting this feeling of filth and agony, and I'm like, I can't take this anymore. And I decided to walk away. And at that time, imagine my desperation was so big that walking away meant I was convinced I was going to die within a month or two. because we really did not have a very good retirement program in the cartel.
Yes, no, you do not have. That's right. That the best benefits. All right, we got about 2 minutes left, so I want to get to this. So you went to prison again. You came out, and you ended up at Wheaton College. How long was your second bid in prison?
And the second bid in prison was almost 5 years again.
Okay.
And in prison, I had a conversion right before prison. I decided I want to know everything about God. I went to Wheaton College, met my amazing wife, the greatest university on earth. I just wanted to be the best theologian in the world. And then I went to Loyola and got a PhD in Bible, became one of five Hispanics in America with a PhD in Bible and ethics. And then I realized I can't put six kids to college with a professor's salary. So I started a little company in the basement of my house, built it into a multi-million dollar company, and retired at 55. And now I dedicate my life to try to make this a better world for our kids and to try to get people to stand up and make a difference and not settle for the lies that we are constantly told, and to put what is really important. You know, we're fighting for the soul of our children, and that's the battle. I got five grandchildren. All my children, God's grace, they're all very successful now, but I nearly lost one to an overdose. And so we just can't give up, and we got to fight. And it's my legacy. I'm going to go down fighting and going to make a difference. You know, they say that if you're crazy enough to think you can change the world, you will. So that's what I'm going to do, and that's what I'm going to come to Chicago to give that message to men and say, listen, men need to be men. We got to quit being nothing, and we got to stand up for what's right, stand up for our family, for values, stand up for our children, and stand up for our country and make this a better place. We just don't have to settle and be complacent and let the world go to hell.
All right. George Valdez is going to be giving the keynote of speech at a Man Among Men conference, Dominican University. It's on Saturday, 3:30 p.m., amanamongmenchicago.com/speakers if you want to attend that. George, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Bro,
amazing story.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful being with you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. Narco Mindset is his book. The life principles that a cocaine drug lord learned on his journey to find meaning in his life. Well, that says everything you need to know right there. Chicago Blackhawks hockey is coming your way on WGN in 2 minutes.